Today's guest on Medeo Scientific's The Business of Lorwan is Johan Stoking, co-founder of the Things Network and the Things Industries, and the CTO behind a lot of the real-world infrastructure that helps Lorwan deployments scale. In this conversation, Johan breaks down why the Things Conference expanded beyond Lorwan into a broader community of communities, and what that says about where the wireless IoT market is headed. We also dig into his niche fridge monitoring example, why Lorwan fits cold chain so well, and what it reveals about the real bottlenecks in IoT adoption. And he walks through the 0 to 1 versus 1 to 1 million path, why open source, transparency, and developer first product choices still matter when customers are trying to scale from a proof of concept into serious production. This episode is sponsored by the Helium Foundation and is dedicated to spreading knowledge about Lorwan. Normally at this point, I would recommend you try the globally available LoRaWAN run by Helium, which you can find at metsci.show/console. But since this is about TTN, I think you should go to thethingsnetwork.org and try theirs instead for this show. Now, let's dig into the conversation with Johan Stoking. Johan, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
I'm psyched to have you. Obviously, you're a big part of what's going on in Lorwan. You just had this conference in September. I think 1,900 people, almost 2,000 people came.
Yeah.
You got to meet and greet and talk to a lot of them. What's going on, dog? What's the latest?
This year, we decided to expand the scope of our conference, not just be a conference about Lorwan.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why we did that was that it's getting harder and harder, actually, to fill 2 days with just LoRaWAN content because everything has been said, and right? There's so much stuff already, and we are now really in a phase where the developers know what it is, also know what it's not good for, right?
Mm-hmm.
And solutions are being built. This whole ecosystem is growing. And the second reason is really that we now have also the confidence really to expand the scope and to invite other wireless technologies to the conference without creating a lot of confusion, right?
Right.
That's also important. And third is that we see that lots of our users and customers, but also partners and people we talk to, combine LoRaWAN with other wireless IoT technologies.
Sure.
And so this could be device makers that have variants of their end devices that are using cellular or Z-Wave, or where LoRaWAN and cellular are complementary because the gateway has cellular backhaul. And so, yeah, it makes a lot of sense to have this ecosystem in one place, really. Yeah.
Yep. And you guys had, I don't know if you'd done this on purpose or not, but it was never kind of the LoRaWAN network. It was always the Things network. And so this allows you to expand into a ton of different connectivity options.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Let's see. So you talked about this idea of a niche with these 8 million commercial fridges, and they're not really worth that much each. Walk me through what that means for someone maybe coming into LoRaWAN who maybe doesn't understand. I know a lot of us do, and a lot of us have been around for a while, but someone who's just learning about this, they found this podcast, you're like, okay, what are some of the problems or bottlenecks or issues here?
So the story we try to tell with the fridge is that we have users and customers who found, they cracked a nut, right? They found a use case which works where LoRaWAN is a really good fit.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, fridges, right? Cold chain in general could be fridges, you know, in restaurants or hotels, but it can also be a pharma. And so when we talk about numbers and, you know, we have, for example, we say that we have this many million end devices on our network, people are like, oh, but it's not the tens of billions that Gartner was expecting 10 years ago, right?
We were promised. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so where are they? And then we come back, you know, we go in this niche where we say, okay, this is IoT, and within IoT, you have constrained devices. You know, they have to work on a battery in a cold environment for a few years, ideally 5 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have compliance reports. And so there's a use case of putting sensors in fridges. And also those sensors, because of the battery constraint, but also the connectivity, the fridge is in a basement. You can't connect it to cellular. You don't have Wi-Fi credentials of the restaurant where you're deploying this, things like that. And so LoRaWAN is a really good fit. And so we always use this use case or a similar use cases to explain how hard it is to build a solution like this, but also to show the potential, because there are so many fridges around the world, right? And there's very little reason to monitor them. And so we have, you know, customers doing a few hundred thousand devices, and they are focusing on cold chain, and The main gist of the story is the addressable market for these types of use cases is huge. And the investment is also very big. The total cost of ownership of a device is, it runs in the billions, the investment that the LoRaWAN community as a whole did.
As far as putting up gateways and sensors and just making sure the whole thing is working. Let's see, you've had this focus on open source, which I think is super cool. I'm not a very mature nerd. I've been doing this like 4 or 5 years. And at first when I heard about open source, like, oh, that's silly. Like people just rip your idea off. And you've had a very different take on it and said like, look, this is one of the best ways to do this. And you've got this idea of 0 to 1 and then 1 to 1 million. For someone that may not have heard that before, can you walk us through what your thinking is on that and some of the challenges going from first 0 to 1 and then 1 to 1 million?
Yeah. So 0 to 1 is where people try to build their first working solution, and 1 to 1 million is to scale that, right? And we always try to address both audiences with the same product. And that's always the challenging bit, but we managed to do that. And open source really is very useful for that 0 to 1, where you have a developer, he has a laptop and a gateway and a device, and they want to make it work. And in a control environment, they don't want to spend money. They want to know exactly what's going on. So they don't want to sign up for a black box and enter their credit card information. So that's one reason to do open source. Another one is to be very transparent with how the technology works. And our audience are developers, right? So we mainly, our users are developers. So they are as technical as we are, just in a different kind of technology. They are sure. More on the end devices side or network operators. And we also think that developers increasingly decide which products are being used in their company. And that goes from, you know, databases to, you know, hardware and other things. It's that if a developer really thinks this is a good product, then there is a good chance that it will be adopted. And so we invest a lot in that and to make it freely available. So we have the Things Network, a community network, which is also free, but it's hosted. So it's more of a black box, but at least you have to set up a lot less. You don't have to run the Things Stack locally. And then we have the Things Stack open source, which is also free, but then you have this full control so you can choose. But we have this path forward to, if you're scaling from one to your, from your working POC to 1 million, that you can basically use the same product, the ThingStack Cloud, which is managed, or the ThingStack Enterprise, that you can run on-prem or in private cloud.
Okay. Yeah, it's super cool to see. I mean, some of this stuff, just from my perspective on the open source side, it's already complicated enough. Like people are going to come and rip it off because they got to learn how to use it first. And it's just such a pain in the butt that you're like, I just want to get this thing working. And it was super cool to read about your approach to that and say like, hey, this is how we get people in the door, is we give them the choice to either do it themselves or try it out and then let them build from there and rely on the fact that we're going to run this pretty awesome thing and we're going to make it a lot easier for them to do the thing they want to do.
Yeah.
Let's see. So this conference that you guys just put on, you said it was the biggest one ever, open it up outside of LoRaWAN. What are you hearing? Kind of what's the word on the street? What are people doing in this world?
Yeah. So it was a big success. There were a lot of new insights for everyone, I think, joining, people who came with a Bluetooth or a Wi-Fi or mm-hmm. a Z-Wave background, they got to learn about LoRaWAN. They got to run into people that they knew already, you know, from the IoT industry, but they didn't know that they were also working in other IoT tech. You know, it was very, very good to connect and to reconnect people. And like you say, I think we're called the Things Network, the Things Industries, and we are not exclusive with LoRaWAN. We released a gateway, the Things Indoor Gateway Pro, last year. We see that more than 80-85%, something like that, uses the cellular backhaul exclusively. And so we really see that there is that cellular and LoRaWAN are very complementary. And yeah, what we were going to do in the Things Stack, we're undecided yet, but we have some ideas. Also, because we see that also on the radio and the silicon and the modem, you know, module level, things start to converge in the sense that there is not necessarily one IoT technology that's going to be dominating. LoRaWAN really has its niche and it also has its limitations.
Sure.
But we see that there is going to be multi-radio silicon, and that is very, very interesting. And that will naturally, I think, result in support that users and customers of that silicon expect from a cloud platform, that if their end devices support, you know, Z-Wave long range and LoRaWAN, for instance, that they're able to manage, you know, both connectivity options.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's a very customer-focused piece instead of saying like, hey, this is just the one technology we'll use and we're going to be the best at it or whatever the message is. It's like, hey, the problem you're trying to solve is to get the data from where it is to where you want it. And LoRaWAN's a big part of that, but it's certainly not the only part. I mean, I've put up enough some mountains.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So we, you know, we strategically decided to go for operational excellence, you know, to be the best in terms of availability and price for the market, and also product leadership to have the best LoRaWAN service stack. But it doesn't mean that we don't believe in any other IoT technologies, right? We still have continuously listened to our users and customers. And yeah, and that's, I think that the conference is really just the start of that.
Was there anything, either a use case or just an idea, that you heard that was surprising to you at that conference?
Yeah, I'm always surprised by what people use our platform for. I don't have specific instances. I actually have to admit also, I forget about those examples and use cases very
quickly. 600 because, conversations. I'm like, just tell me the best one. You're like, dude, I had so many.
Yeah, no, it's really endless. And I have a three-year-old and he was also at the conference. And,
okay, takes up your focus.
We have this... No, not really, but we had this wall of fame and this, you know, this wall of IoT devices, and he was looking at that and he saw this cow, right? Something to cuddle with, and some device maker used that as an example to show that there is this cow tracker, right? A GPS tracker for cattle. Mm-hmm. So he ran immediately to the cow and was like, oh, wow, this is... And then, you know, he also understands a lot better now what we're doing. That's always very inspiring. And it really ranges from cattle tracking to also very boring things like, you know, water metering and other utility stuff, just sending data once in a while. But also sometimes really societal impact use cases, you know, very small things from... crowdsourced network to measure the air quality during New Year's, for instance, where, you know, people have lots of fireworks and other things. And they make a map for that, and they use the Things Network for that. That's really great. And then, yeah, fortunately, we have a lot of paying customers to pay our bills. Yeah. And those use cases are not that exciting, to be honest.
It sure may seem like that to you because you guys have been doing it for so long. It's like, another, whatever, 10,000 customers on water meters. From the kind of outsider's perspective where I'm coming from, it's just the coolest thing to think that we spent whatever it was, 40, 50, 80 years with these, you know, dumb devices and thinking like we'll never figure out what's going on. You just kind of bill people once a month. And we've come into this time really in the last probably 10 years where all of a sudden we now know so much more about our world. And so an individual use case may be like, all right, water meter, whatever. But thinking about what impact does that have, as you're saying, on society, to understand these at a granular level outside of the lab, what you're doing is pretty rad.
Yeah, no, I very much agree with that view. And also, I think it's really good for us and for everyone in IoT to realize that we are basically generating data now also for, which is very relevant also now in the whole AI revolution, where there's so much need for high quality, structured, timestamped data that we might not even, you know, see the impact of that yet. But just the fact that we are generating a lot of stuff and that we're making it work for our customers, that they will be able to train on that data and they will surprise us in a few years from now with really exciting solutions.
Yeah.
And that could be, you know, the fridge use case, you know, it starts with a compliancy report and a PDF that says, you know, this fridge was in the right temperature ranges. And maybe in a few years from now, they're able to reduce power consumptions of those fridges by 25%. And, you know, those things are incremental, but they are increasingly exciting for sure.
Yeah, it makes a difference. I was at a conference last year, the Indoor Agriculture Conference up in Vegas. And one of the speakers there had said like, oh, I've heard for years that AI is going to make my data valuable. I've never been able to sell it. And I can't help but think in the years since, like it must be a lot easier to sell data, and companies like yours, if not positioned to sell the data that you have, are certainly positioned to kind of build these bridges between customers who are generating this data and clients who might want to buy that data to train their own models. Is that something that you guys are looking at, or are you like, hey, we're just going to let the market take care of that?
We are currently not looking at that on the application level. I can imagine that it could become very much interesting for customers to be able to sell their data and to use our platform as a distribution channel, because the data is there already, and that they may, that, you know, it could be as simple as having their customers subscribe to the data feed
Sure.
That is in our platform. And we may also have play a commercial role in that. I think on the shorter term, it would be in the network metadata, which is a lot of data that we can use. And we can also help customers with recommendation algorithms to optimize their network. And the ROI on that is almost always positive, because even if we would just recommend, place one or two gateways there and there, right? That will have this effect on the LoRaWAN data rates, and that will have this effect on the packet error rates, and this effect on the battery consumption of those end devices because they don't have to scream at SF12.
Yep.
And for that, yeah, certainly we need a lot of data, and this is data that we have, and it makes most sense for us if we take this role and build such AI-driven solutions.
Yeah. I'm thinking, because you guys are European based and the privacy laws there are pretty strict. So you guys have kept the network data the whole time, or is that something that each customer has to opt into and said, yeah, I've got this gateway up and you can use this data? Or is that just a fundamental piece of, if you're on TTN, like, we're going to have this data so that we can help all customers figure out how to get the best coverage?
Yeah, so this is not any personal identifiable data, right? So this is just network metadata. This is really nothing more than gateway locations and device locations and the RF conditions.
Okay, so like RSSI, SNR.
Packet loss, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, packet loss. And that's already most of it.
Yeah.
So we need this data for us to do our job in the first place. And we store it indeed for longer periods to do very useful analysis.
Yeah. I can just imagine if you have it back to day one, you probably have somewhere this visualization of like, this is how the network grew. And I know one of the first use cases was like, hey, this is how fast we could cover a city. But it would be super cool to see like, this is how fast we cover the world. And this is like where you can see it, in the same way that other networks have the same kind of visualization. Like, this is where you could put a gateway and this is where you don't need to put one. Very cool. All right. As we wrap this thing up, we're right at the end of 2025 here, December 19th. So just a couple of days left in the year. Anything that you're super psyched on for 2026? You're like, dude, we're going to go out and crush this next year.
We're always very excited for the next conference, but that's going to be in September only. But preparations already start for us quite soon. So that's definitely on our agenda already in a few months from now. And we're very much looking forward to that. On the LoRaWAN level, there are very nice things in the pipeline, which I am not able to share a lot today.
Ooh, exciting.
It's good. We need to wait for the LoRaWAN to have everything ready.
Yep.
But certainly on the LoRaWAN specifications side, there are very nice things coming. Not only on the LoRaWAN spec itself, but also making stuff work better together in a plug-and-play manner. So I'm spending a lot of time on that, and I'm expecting that we will see some nice releases in the coming, say, 6-7 months.
Super exciting. And will we see you at CES, or you're not coming to America this year?
So yeah, besides my 3-year-old, I also have a 6-week-old daughter now. So very nice, but I'm skipping this year. Yeah. No, it's a 9 hours time difference and a very long trip. So I can't leave my wife alone with two of them. Not yet.
Yeah. It's funny. I feel the same way when like, the stuff's going on in Barcelona. I'm like, it's a huge time difference and I'm out there for 2 days. It's like seems like a 2-day commitment, but it's like a 10-day commitment to get ready and recover.
Yeah.
So, Johan, thanks a ton for making the time. I know you're busy. Obviously, you got these two kiddos plus a business to run. So I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us a little bit about what the Things Industries and Things Network is doing and how you guys are expanding. Thank you.
Thanks.
That's it for this episode of The Business of LoRaWAN. If you want to go deeper and actually deploy devices, the Medio Scientific Console is the fastest way to do that. And honestly, it's also the best way to support the show. When you use the console, you're not just listening, you're participating in the same real-world LoRaWAN work we talk about here every week. You can get started with the free trial at medioscientific.com. Huge thanks to the sponsor of this show, the Helium Foundation, for supporting open LoRaWAN infrastructure worldwide. Check them out at helium.foundation. And if the show's been useful, a quick rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to this really helps people find it and helps the show grow so we can help more people. I'm Nick Hawks with Medio Scientific. I'll catch you on the next episode.